Okay, so up to Perek Gimel. We are in the middle of Pasuk Beis and Gimel. I'll read the Pasukim very quickly. Sunny Tavia Vyaya Veira. Micha here is coming to give Musa. And the Beis and Gimel is a continuation of Musa. They hate, well, we didn't do Gimel. So we didn't do Gimel. We only did Aleph and Beis. Okay, Aleph and Beis. We didn't do Gimel. So we're up to Pasuk Gimel. Okay, so let's in fact start with Pasuk Gimel. Okay, Pasuk Gimel says, V'asher ochlu she'er ami. Okay, and the leaders, we are focusing on the leaders, they eat the she'er ami. She'er means the flesh, or it can mean the remnants of the Jewish people. The oiram me'alehem hifshitu. They strip their skin from upon them. V'yes asmo sehem pitzechu. They smash their bones. Pitzechu means to break. To smash their bones. The Mitzudos Tzion translates the word Inyan Pisicha. K'may Pitzchu Viridinu V'zameir. Open up. They open up their bones. Ufarsu Ka'asher Basir. Ufarsu means they spread it out. They spread out the pieces. Ka'asher. What? They break ufarsu. What is the mitzudo sion? Say ufarsu miloshen pirusa, a piece. Ushevira, okay, a broken piece. Him he the sin doesn't matter. Even though the word ufarshu, parish ein lohem. Okay, this okay fine. Okay, it's opened up. Fine.
Break open.
Okay, to break open, to break, to pisicha, two words which mean pretty much the same thing. They break, pitzehu ufarsu kasher basir, pat. They put the pieces inside, they break open the pieces as if they're about to cook them in a pot. We'll see the mitzudos in a moment. Uchibasar, like flesh, besech kalochas. A kalochas is a special utensil that's made for cooking. Okay, we have that by the children. I think by the Bnei Eli, there they were guilty of what they were doing with the meat in the seer, the kalochas. It's a certain type of utensil. Let's do pasuk dalit. Oz yizaku el Hashem v'lo yane oisam. Then these leaders will cry to Hashem and Hashem will answer them. V'yaster ponav mehem boisahi kasher heireyu ma'al lehem. Hashem will conceal his face from them at that time. Kasher, equivalent, the word kasher here is not so easy to translate. Kasher, equivalent to heireyu, or because heireyu ma'alelehem, they have made evil their ways. Two psukim coming to emphasize, elaborating upon the sins of the leaders. There's a bit of a repetition in Pasuk Gimel to what is in Pasuk Beis, and that requires us to understand why indeed there is, what is the significance of the repetition. Okay, so let's see. Let's go back and see the mitzvot of Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk Gimel says, "Asher achlu, v'heim asher achlu b'sar ami heimat tzadikim." The wicked people, they eat the flesh of my nation. Who was ami? Ami here refers to the tzadikim. The tzadikim are devoured by the wicked people. Pitzeichu poischem. They open up atzma sehem l'harik es hamoyach. They break open their bones to suck out the marrow. The gam zehu inyan haflaga. This is an exaggeration. Ufar su. Mishabri my son pirusos, they break into pieces. Kasha yasu as abasa pirusos lahasimam basir, just like you do when you make cholent. You can't fit the piece of meat into the pot. You got to cut it into smaller pieces if it's too big to fit into the pot. Uvesech hakalachas levash lesam into the kalachas when they cook their flesh. Next pasuk dalid on the next page, page 477. Oz yizaku lechein oz bevo hapuranuyos. When the destruction, when the evil comes, the day of reckoning comes upon them, Yizaku el Hashem v'lo yaneh Elohem Hashem will not answer them. V'yaser ponav l'val yashkech b'tzarasam. Hashem will not answer their prayers in the time of their difficulty. Why? Kasher heireyu kimo, just like sheheireyu ma'aseihem. It's mida kineged mida. When the poor people cry to them and ask for assistance, or at least ask them not to be abused, tormented, and taken advantage of, these wealthy people, these leaders, did not listen. They ignored. They were deaf to their pleas. Mida keneged mida. When these individuals, they are in need of Hashem helping them, Hashem will not listen to them. Kasher here means it's equivalent. It's mida keneged mida. It's in direct proportion. Kimo sheheireu ma'asehem shloi shamu lezakas ha'ne'eshakim. They did not listen to the cry of the oppressed. V'yistiru panim mehem, and they concealed themselves from them. Kain ese lohem gam ani. I will act in a similar way. So according to the parish of the Mitzvot David, the translation of the pasuk is not the way I said. Because when I read the pasuk Dalet, I translated the words v'yaster panav mehem ba'esahi. I translated those words in reference to Hashem, that Hashem will conceal his panim from the Jewish people at that time, a time of tzara. That's not what it says in the Mitzvot. The Mitzvot is just the opposite. This is referring to the people. The wicked people, the leaders, and the people in power, they chose to ignore the plight of the victims. And because v'yaster panav mehem bo'esahi, okay, because they concealed their panim from mehem, meaning from the poor people at that time, therefore, that's why, now we have to read the pasuk out of order, we have to read it out of order, that's what we do many, many times. That is why, oz, yizaku el Hashem v'lo yane oisam, that is why when you will now call out to Hashem, Hashem will not listen, because, mida keneged mida, kasher heire ma'al elehem, just like you have been evil in you concealing your ponim mehem bo esahi. Okay, that's what it seems he's trying to say. That's the way he's seen the mitzvot of it. Seems to try to take the pasuk, and he's saying kasher heiru kimoi l'chein bo bo haparanis yizaku el Hashem v'lo yane lahem v'yaster ponov. No, maybe I'm making a mistake. V'yaster lebal yashkich b'tzarasam v'yaster ponov mehem. No, I take it back. Okay, I take it back. Because he says clearly, v'yaster panav leval yashkiach bitzarosam kasher heyre. So everything over here that he's saying over here in this part of the pasuk is really just an explanation. He's embellishing it into the explanation, but he's using the same language, but it's not how he learns the subject of the pasuk. Kimboy sheheyre ma'asim shloshamu lezakas haneshokim v'yistiru panim mehem k'neselohem gamani. Okay, so let's translate the pasuk, the two psukim, one more time together, one more time before we go into Rashi. Pasuk Dal Gimel says, V'asher ochlu she'er ami. These wicked people who are, we're calling here the leaders, people in positions of power, they ate up the she'er ami. Who is the she'er ami? The tzaddikim. The Mitzvot David takes this word, she'er ami, the tzaddikim, the oira me'aleihem hifshitu, they strip their skin from upon them. V'yes atzmoisehem pitzehu, they took their bones, they cracked them open to suck out the marrow. Uforisu, and they took their meat, their flesh, and they broke it into pieces in order that it should fit nice and tight and snug in the pot. Ka'asher basir, like a person does when they put meat into a pot. Uchivasar besech ka'lochas. Because of this crime, us therefore, then, yizaku el Hashem v'lo yane oisam, mida keneged mida, when their time will come and a tsar will come upon them, they will cry to Hashem, Hashem not answer them. V'yaster panav mehem, Hashem will conceal his face from them, ba'esahi, mida keneged mida, kasher, proportional, equal to what mida keneged mida, kasher, herir ma'al elehem, like they have been evil in their own deeds by not listening to the plight of the poor people. Now, we have to understand there is here repetition, because Pasuk Beis, go back to Pasuk Beis. Pasuk Beis says, Soinei toi ve'oyevei ra, the leaders, they love evil and they hate to be good. Goizle oiram, here it says they steal oiram me'alehem, their skin from upon their bodies. Usha'iram, and their skin, their flesh me'al atzmoisam. Pasuk Beis discusses the hide, the skin of man and his flesh. And Pasuk Gimel says the same thing. They eat them up, sherami, v'oiram me'aleihem hifshitu. Now here it doesn't say they steal. It says they strip. they pull off. So what's the difference? Why in Pasuk Beis, when we have already mentioned this idea of Goizlei Oiram Me'aleihem, why is it now necessary to repeat this idea with the expression the Oiram Me'aleihem Hifshitu? Torture you. It's not enough. Just they steal.
So two different expressions of bad things.
Okay. So, but there is a, but still, you're right. There's the stealing of their flesh from a pot. But how do you take off the flesh? May I lay him? How do you?
Okay.
I agree with you. There is a lot of it's not exactly the same, and there are different degrees. But it's once you already stole their skin, why are we going backwards? And now telling you the way they stole their skins was by pulling it off their bodies. This is one of the most horrible things we've learned. The Asara Harugei Malchus, Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol, was from the most beautiful people in the world. And what did the daughter of the Kesar say? She said, she asked her father to preserve him because of his beauty. And then when her father said no, so she said to at least preserve his skin, this suras panim, we'll make a mannequin out of it. And he proceeded to pull the skin off his face when he was alive. So it's described in the piyut, in the kina, and the selicha of the Asara Gimalchus as one of the most grotesque, the most extreme forms of torture. And here we have it right over here, hifshitu.
Okay,
that,
but here we don't take it literally.
Okay, we don't take it literally. That's correct. But the fact that we do use this as a metaphor is an indication that the torture that the leaders inflicted upon the common man was really off the charts, was something extremely intense. To use such terms, such metaphors of taking skin and pulling it off a living person, this is really off the charts. Okay, that's what it says over here. And by the way, Derech Agav, I didn't get a good answer, but I was preparing for Tisha B'Av, came across a very simple question. First, you have the daughter of Rabbi Yishmael. She says to her father that the daughter of the Kesar says to her father, the Kesar, that Rabbi Yishmael is such a beautiful person. It's not kedai to kill him. Let him live. Have rachmanis. Let him live to preserve his beauty. And when her father said no, What did she ask? At least preserve his flesh, but to preserve the skin is the ultimate, ultimate torture. So how did she go in 3 seconds, mikotze elakotze? First she said, let him live. Have rachmanis upon him. Okay, let him live, rachmanis. And the next second she said, well, if you're not going to let him live, so flay the skin off his face. In other words, torture him in a way that the world has never seen before. What? She went mikotze elakotze in a span of 3 seconds to show him rachmonos, to live, to then, if her father says no, he can't live. Okay, he can't live. So I had rachmanis on him. I wanted him to stay alive because there's something valuable about him in this world. He has a beauty, which I appreciate. No, I'm not going to get that. Okay, so he'll die. She should now become so cruel, so intensely cruel to go and flay the skin off his face. How do you understand that? So what the answer is, I mean, you can say whatever you want to say, but one approach is, her rachmanus to keep him alive was not rachmanus. It's, I want the skin. I want the beauty. It happens to be the simplest way to preserve the beauty is because as if it'll be alive. So a bystander, an observer, would make a mistake and think, look what a wonderful person this woman is. She's asking her father to show rachmonos. Don't kill him, Dad. Daddy, such a good guy. He's such a beautiful person. Don't kill him.
No, that's not at all what she said.
No, but we don't know that. That's exactly the point. We did not know that. If you were to stop the story right there.
She is interested.
It's beauty.
In the superficial. Keep him around as a pet or whatever it is that she can admire him, the face, not the person, and any, you know, whatever she wishes.
Yeah, but there's something very interesting. You would not know that. You would not know that until the story is over. If the story would stop, if you would have a story, the Kesar is about to execute Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. His daughter shows up and says, Dad, this guy, he's so beautiful. Have Rachmonis, don't kill him. And her father says no. And that's all we know. The story stops right then and there. What would you say? You would walk away from the store and you would say the Kesars are Russia and the daughter was a nice girl. She was a nice girl. She had Rachmanis. She was a nice person. She was trying to tame her father, trying to keep him calm. And have Rachmanis, don't kill him. He's look how beautiful he is. The beauty evoked in her Rachmanis. If the story would stop there, that is how historians would record the event. But it's not where the story stops. Chazal very careful to note the story goes on. He said no. Oh no, okay. So the next best thing is to pull the skin off his flesh alive. I guess if he would die first and you'd pull the skin off, it wouldn't be the same. You got to pull, in order to preserve the skin, it has to be pulled off when he's alive. Once he already dies and you try to pull it off, it's not going to work. It's going to shrink. You're not going to be able to preserve it. So okay, Dad, you don't want to listen to me. You don't want to keep him alive. Okay, so the next best thing is we should pull off his skin off his face alive and torture him in a way that no human being has experienced until now. So what does that show? The end of the story is a revelation that when she originally said "Have Rachmanus on Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol," it wasn't because she could care less. It wasn't because she's a person of rachamim, ki kel rachum v'chananata. It was pure selfishness, pure taiva, pure superficial to preserve his beauty. This is the story of the world. In the world, the goyim are always coming to say, we're so good, we're such good people, we're humanitarians. Am I saying that word correctly? We're so good. We love mankind. We love mankind. We love animals. We love animals. Why do you have to go and lock up an elephant in the circus, in the zoo? Why do you have to torture? We love people. Have rachmanis. Have rachmanis. Right? This is what the world claims. Problem is, the story stops there. When you go and you see the end of the story, you realize that the Rachmanus is not a real Rachmanus upon someone else. It's a Rachmanus upon themselves. It's all selfishness. And that selfishness, that Rachmanus is a lie. And the truth is that Rachmanus will lead to the ultimate cruelty. Yes, the Ben Ubas.
And again, there are these. The idea is their beauty, and let's breed them and
right
exactly and make a profit out of their beauty.
Their beauty, exactly. But you would not know that unless you go to the end of the story. If you would stop the story, Dad, don't kill him. He's a beautiful person. Have rachmanis. You would never know. You would be forced to say that she was a good person, and she has rachamim upon humanity. But because the story does not end there, And when he says, no, I'm going to kill him, and she has now, and she says, okay, if you're going to kill him, so we have to do the next best thing and to preserve the beauty by pulling the skin off his flesh. Whoa, where's your rachmanis? It's a revelation that when you said to keep him alive, it wasn't because you have any rachmanis. It's because you love yourself and you want to preserve, you want to take for yourself the beauty. And don't come claim, oh, you're a good person, you have rachmanis. You have no rachmanis. This is, Mamash, you see this in the world. Yeah.
Wasn't that the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai when they were building
the Umma Yisraelam? What are they doing it for?
We have all these beautiful highways. I mean, we do. There's a whole transportation system. You can't say there isn't. You know, it's a tremendous system, very complex. But
the goal? What's the purpose?
So, according to, assuming that the machlokas continues, Rabbi Yehuda says, you know, they're building it to build it. But Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says no.
They're all doing it for themselves. The evil is right. Okay, in Echadem, there's a machloikis. So that. But here, in the case of the Kesar, it's only one way. There's nothing to talk about. It's a revelation. Seif Ma'is of a Machshava Tchil is a revelation of what our covenant was originally. Okay, going back over here. So we have the stripping of the flesh. And by the way, I cannot pass up this pas by mentioning to by reminding you of what we learned. We've mentioned a few times is that what is the translation of the word pshat. Pshat, you learn Rashi. Loi Rashi, loi Bosi, elo leforesh, elo leforesh. I'm only coming to give you the simple interpretation. You have the Pashtonim, a whole group of Rishonim. In fact, all of the Rishonim were what we call Pashtonim. They all are coming to teach us the simple Perush Hamilois of the Pasuk, what we call in our vernacular Pshat. Pshat. Simple translation. Don't give me homiletics. Don't give me drashos, memory chazal. What is the simple interpretation of the pasuk? Where does that word come from? Rav Moshe Shapiro, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he explains it comes from the word hifshit. V'hifshit es ho'ila. The word we have in our pasuk as well. V'oiram me'aleyem hifshitu. What do you do when you take an animal, a dead animal, and you take off the skin?
No, just the skin.
Just the skin. What do you do when
the surface?
What do you do when you take off the skin? When you pull off the skin, you basically let's look and see what's under the hood.
Yeah, but not all the way. It's only
it's correct. Very good. You make a good point. It's not the bossa. There's still bossa under the R. There's still bossa, but at least it's not superficial. We make a mistake and we think that pshat means the most superficial translation of the pasuk. That's incorrect. Pshat comes from the word hifshit. Hifshit means take off the outer layer. You're being fooled. You see skin. Take off the skin. Under the skin, there's something else. There's basar. There's something much more valuable. Okay, eat a piece of chicken, you're not supposed to eat the skin. The skin is not healthy. The truth would be that they would be very happy, the Surgeon General would be very happy if all of the poultry companies would remove the skin of the chicken when they sell it to you when it's sold, because it doesn't provide very much nutritional value. It's not very healthy. However, the customer will not buy a chicken unless they see the skin. That's the way it is. What? Okay, I'm talking about generally. You go and you buy poultry, go buy, it comes with this skin, and the customer is paying for its weight. maybe that's why, but it's not nutritional. You know, I told you in kashrus, you know, they have to remove the feathers. It's a very, very big expense. You're paying for it. You are paying more money. Every time you buy a piece of chicken, what are you paying for? You're paying for kashrus, paying a lot more for kashrus. How much kosher chicken? Double the price of non-kosher? Now, can you imagine that? When you buy a piece of kosher, glatt kosher chicken, it's not called glatt. There's nothing that's called glatt, really, by chicken. Only by meat there's something called glatt. When you buy, you know, a very high standard of kashrus, of poultry, it's about double the price of what you would be paying if you bought non-kosher. And non-kosher means poultry that doesn't have a hersher. Why? Well, number one, it lives a week less. Okay, non-kosher poultry, they don't have to feed so long. They only feed it between 5 and 6 weeks. Once a bird reaches 5 weeks, it's done. It's not going to grow anymore. Every second you waste by not slaughtering it and feeding it more and providing home and board, you know, electricity and air conditioning and heat and life insurance, just a waste of money because once it gets to 5 weeks, it's done. So why then by kosher birds, they feed it for an additional week, for 6 to 7 weeks? Because they have discovered that if you slaughter a bird after 5 weeks, there are a lot of trephes. For some reason, there are a lot of issues that they discover in their kishkas, in their heart, their lungs, their intestines, and their real shalos that the bird may be a trepha. If you wait one more week, it's a very strange thing, but the reality is if you wait one more week, many of the health issues go away, and there's no issue with the lungs, no issue with the heart, no issue with things in the different spots or different things in the intestines. So it's worth it for the kashrus organizations to demand that you feed the bird. It's a lot of money. You have to give it more feed. It's a lot of feed to keep it alive for another week because it solves a lot of kashrus issues. The other big thing is that they have to get rid of the feathers. How to get rid of the feathers? So they used to burn it off. They used to blowtorch it off. Problem is, if you blowtorch it, some will claim that, you know, it's treif. You can no longer do melicha. You can no longer salt it. If you apply fire to a bird before you do melicha, melicha is not going to work. So it'll be treif. You're not going to be able to do the melicha. So therefore, they don't want to use the blowtorch like they do in Purdue. Purdue, they get rid of the feathers. The blowtorch is very cheap. It's very easy to go through. They go through a big area where there's fire and it burns off the feathers in a second. But a Jewish bird can do that because they'll make a treif. So they have to have what's called rubber fingers. Now the rubber fingers it's a very expensive process. It's a lot of electricity. So it's a very big thing. It's a very, very complicated machine. And the problem is the rubber fingers is so good, not only does it pull off the feathers, it pulls off the skin. So what are you going to do now? The rubber fingers that spin against this, it pulls off the skin. That's no good. So what's the solution? The solution is go back to the manufacturer and tell them to feed it a richer diet which causes the bird to grow a thick skin. And when there's a thick skin, the rubber fingers will not pull off the skin. But the customer has to pay for that expensive diet which causes the birds to grow a thick skin. Okay, so we have a lot of the skin of a bird, Rabbi Isai, has a long history. And when I went to the ASCOU many years ago, they explained all this to us. The skin of poultry has a long history to it. But the point we're trying to make over here is that there's something underneath it. V'hifshit eshoila, you take it off. There's more than what meets the eye. Pshat is not just what you see. Pshat means hifshit. Take off a layer. Take off a layer and look at it from within. You're going to see something different, and that's going to be the true understanding of the verse or of anything that you learn. You want to go deeper, okay, you can take the meat and cut up the meat also and go to the bones. Then you want to go even deeper, you can break open the bones and pull out the marrow. Okay, there's no limit to how deep you can go. But pshat, which is understood to mean the simplest interpretation, also has an element of depth. Also has an element of there's more than what you see, there's something that is underneath. That's what the Torah says, V'arum he'alem hefshitu. Okay, we did the mitzvahs. Let's see Rashi. Rashi pasuk gimel says sha'ar ami, besar ami. The mitzvahs, did he say the word? Did he say the word over here in this pasuk gimel to referring to sha'ar ami? In the mitzvahs, mitzvahs Tzion did not want to translate the word sha'ar, but in the mitzvahs David he said Asher Ochlu Bisar Ami. So indeed he did say. He did say She'er. He did say so far they're exactly the same thing. Okay, it doesn't mean the remnants of my people. It means the Basar. And he interpreted the Bisar Ami metaphorically to refer to the Tzadikim. And we would assume that the Tzadikim, they're the She'er, the remnant, the She'edis Yisrael, but it's not the Pshat.
No.
The Pshat over here is She'er means meat.
Yeah, like
flesh. It means flesh, exactly. So that's what it means over here, al-derch pshat. There's no other thing so far that both Rashi and the Mitzudos, when they make use the word she'er ami, it means bosar. Besar ami. Look over here on the side, in the Sifsis, the Kainim, v'asher ochlu b'she'er ami, perish Rashi zal, besar ami, kach tzorich loymar. Will prepare meat la'amo for his nation. Okay, further in Rashi, they opened up to extract the marrow. Kimo patschu rina, to open up your mouth or open up your heart with expressions of joy. Paschu peberina, it's interpreted there to mean open up your mouth with songs of joy. Next page, ufar su ba'akasher basir, umishabrim hoivarim kasher yishabru hanisachim hanitanim basir levashel. They broke up the pieces of meat into little sections in order that they can fit it into the pot. Ufar su l'shoin shever, k'moy parois l'ro'ev lachmecha. Break off to the hungry your bread.
Yeah,
and that pasuk, a samach and a sin are commonly interchanged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so here it means, paros means a pras. Right. Pras means a half a loaf of bread. A loaf of bread is how many eggs? It's either six, I forgot how does it go? I forgot the whole calculation. It means pras. A pras means a half a loaf of bread. Velo yifrisu lohem, do not break off a piece of bread for them. Perasot siyoin. Now here he says something very interesting. This is a pasuk in Eicha, and over here he's saying a new translation, because I don't think what he's saying in Rashi here is a translation we commonly understand. Perasot siyoin means she is spread out. But what's the pasuk? The whole pasuk, she spreads out her hands? No, perasot siyoin. He is interpreting the word parasa means their tzion is broken.
Yes.
Okay, I don't think that's the common art scroll translation. You have to go look it up another time. But at least now he's telling us the word parasa in this, based upon this pasuk here in Micha, means tzion is in a state of brokenness. She's damaged. She's damaged. Okay. Kolachas, what is that? That is, Rebbe Chol, you going to come to the rescue for this? What's a kolachas?
Calder, which is like
a cauldron. It's a pot. What's the difference between a pot and a cauldron?
A large pot.
Very large pot. Okay. Pasuk Dalid, Oz Yizaku El Hashem, Oz Bevo Oisei Ho'eis, Amur Lamala, the day of reckoning, Osoif Esoif Yaakov, when they will be going to Golis. Yizaku el Hashem leitiv lochem b'ratzon amoy. They're going to cry to Hashem that Hashem should be good b'ratzon amo for the benefit b'ratzon amo v'simchas goyoy. Goyoy means his nation. A very unusual form of the word. Goy means a nation. Goyoy, his nation. That Hashem should be good. Hashem should be good in order for the goodwill of his nation and the joy of his goy. Two words, an amoy and a goy. We use ritzoin means the will for amoy and simcha for his nation. That's what the people will do at the time of day when they're in an eighth sorrow. But the lo yaneo, Yisam Hashem not answer, me the connected, because they did not answer the poor people when they cried out in their time of oppression. Let's see the Radak. Radak, Pasik, Gimel, back on page 475, Asha Achlu, Higdil Maasei, the pasukim are coming to magnify the degree of torture, corruption, and averis. The Omar, V'yes atzma sehem pitzehu, they broke open their bones. Ufarsuka asher basir. Notice he totally skipped the other part of the pasuk of eating the meat, and he didn't explain anything about stripping off the skin, even though there appears to be repetition. For some reason, he didn't want to say anything over here. But yes, atzma sehem pitzech, they broke the bones open. Parsu bashkasher basir v'chabos b'sech kolachas yishberu, to break. Chatzamayz v'yachtechu abasar, to cut the flesh. K'misher itzel laseis chatzamayz v'abasar b'siru v'kolachas. A person wants to put the bones and meat to fit them into the pot. V'chol zel lahaflagas haraosh oisim lo aniyim. This is an exaggeration in order to emphasize the degree of evil, the crime of what's taking place. That's the pasuk. So it's very fascinating. Over here, this is not the way the common translation. When it says the word perasot zion biyodeha, I in my ignorance always assumed the mean like this. Zion puts out her hands and the feet, right? Oi! Can you ever do that? Oy vey, what am I going to do now? You raise up your hands like this as an expression of defeat or an expression of tsar. Perasot zion biyodeha.
Despair.
But that's not what it says here. They're both learning the word perasa means they're broken. Perasa, tzion biyodeha, tzion is broken, biyodeha. Her hands are broken. She's in a cast. Not even that. Her hands are shattered. Perasa, tzion biyodeha, we read it backwards. The yodeha of tzion, the hands of tzion are broken. There's nothing that she can do. Why? Because the word perasa is the same as perasa with the sin, with the samach. Perasa, sin biodecha, the sin and the samach are interchangeable. Okay, and then is the classic word. This is something which you all know, parois, lora'ev lachmecha, break off a piece of bread for the hungry. Read it backwards. Parois lachmecha, lora'ev. Break off a piece of bread, a slice of bread, and give it to someone who is hungry. So here it's clear as day. The word parois means to break. Oh, here we have the art scroll, and it says pochadu. Where's Teresa?
No, I'm saying, imagine that the pasuk is just.
It is Tehillim? Yeah.
Dalit, imagine that with the flesh. I mean, with the.
Pahalo yadu kol poyim oichle ami achlu lechem Hashem loy karahu. Oichle ami, who devour my nation as they would devour bread. Okay, this is talking about our enemies. They eat us up the same way one eats bread. Okay, so it's a similar idea. Okay, over here we're discussing the Jewish people themselves. Thank you. They're eating up the poor people, the vulnerable. Pasuk, next pasuk. Pasuk, Dalit, and then the seer, next page 477. 477, seer, and Kidera, v'chen kolachas. These are two pots. Ela she'asuya b'techuna acheres. A kolachas. A is a larger pot. It's made in different forms. Seer is a dud. Okay, it's a different. There are many words. There are many words for pots. Go on Amazon. You'll learn very quickly. There are many different types of pots. Okay, I never knew about the mile of a copper pot. Because copper is very. It gets hot. We once had a pot. I was cleaning the basement. There was a big, heavy copper pot. I didn't think anything about it. So I gave it away. I gave it away. Then, years later, I realized, wait a minute. You don't give away a copper pot. You know how much one of those things can cost? A good copper pot can cost $500. Go on Amazon. A real copper pot, through and through, they're so expensive, most people can't afford to buy it. What? Fortune of money.
So
it heats evenly, and also very quickly. It gets hot very quickly, and the heat is distributed. It maintains its heat, and the heat is distributed among the walls of the pot equally. There's a lot of miles. It used to be years ago, it's no big deal. Copper was cheap. Everyone. Today, to buy copper is a fortune.
Why? Pennies anymore.
What?
They
It's not worth it. It would cost 10 cents a penny. It already cost 5 cents. It already cost, today it's an alloy, and even the alloy, it costs the government more than a penny for a penny.
Want to eliminate
it. Right, because
someone insures from Canada. Canada doesn't have pennies anymore.
No.
Since when?
I don't know. Just said they don't have pennies anymore.
It's going to come to that. There's no doubt about it. Eventually, at some point in time in America, they'll also eliminate the penny because it costs them more to make a penny than the penny. All right, but any event.
And by the way, in Yirmiyahu, Sirin Nafuah
Anira, the beginning of Sefer Yirmiyahu, the first paragraph, I see a Sirin Nafuah that is steaming hot. I see. Okay, so dud v'kalachas shloshim in yikedera. We have three words: a seer, a dud, a kalachas shloshim in yikedera. Elosh kalachas asu b'tchuna achas shloiko acheres. Each one has a function, a unique function, a unique purpose. That's why it's been in different shape. You have to go ask all the people who write the cookbooks, the art school. They'll explain all this to you. They sell more cookbooks than they sell chumashim and sudurim. So I'm sure you'll learn all the chachma there. The Yoinus Antir game udivazu nichse ami. So udivazu means they despoil. Okay, they despoil the assets of my people. Umamon yikarhoin minhoin nos. We had this yesterday, and they take their wealth. The yash orhoin migamrin toivin umefalgin yasoin kimod demefalgin. So he translates the whole pasuk generally. I don't know the exact words of each word, the exact translation of each word, but generally, that the leaders, the people in the position of power, they steal their assets, and whatever is left over, they negamrin, they chop up, and they distribute. They take for themselves the good stuff, and whatever is not so good, they distribute. They redistribute the wealth. They take it. Sounds like a politician. You take a chunk.
Aggressive.
You take the wealth away from the people, and whatever they have left, you redistribute. Communism. The main assets of the country. That's really what happens. You have a country. Let's say they have an asset. They have oil. Or they have precious metals, or they have some other thing. Oh, that becomes property of the state. The country has an asset.
They nationalize.
That's nationalized.
Yes.
Anything which makes a lot of money, even if the airline, if the thing which makes the most money in the country is the airline industry. Oh. That becomes a national airline. It's not privatized. Whatever makes the most money becomes property of the state. And everything else, the grocery stores, we have to tax everyone to redistribute whatever else people have for themselves. Isn't that exactly what the Targum says? Targum says is that the leaders, they take for themselves all the good stuff, mm-hmm. and everything else they put in a pot to redistribute.
Mm. Look at the cars, all these dictators.
Right, the car industries. Right, it's a state like in South Korea, North Korea, or something like that. Is that that's what happens in communism, in these type in communist socialism, in certain third world, whatever these countries, anything which where the money is, the big money. That's state owned. Don't you dare go near it.
Look, industries, oil.
You're talking even about in the automobile industry. Anything. You have to study world history, study what's going on, and then we're democratic. There's capitalism in our country. We're like America. We let people have jobs. People have grocery stores.
It's monopolies.
Right, the monopolies are under state control. The monopolies are state controlled. And the small stuff, whatever's left over, that they tax. They tax you to such a degree where basically it's a redistribution of the wealth, whatever's left over. So isn't that exactly what Micha said? Micha was an economist. He understood how the economies of world nations work. And that's what Dr. Leib says. It's an amazing, I think it's really an amazing insight. Two of my fathers on the law. My father, I know from this. This idea of really what the Targum is saying. We read the Targum moment in the Yonasan Targum. Look at those words. Udvazu. Udvazu means they despoil. Lashon of Biza. Biza. You take the spoils of war for yourself. You take what?
Plunder.
The plunder. You plunder. Udvazu nichse ami. They plunder the assets. Umamon yikorhoin minhoin nosvin. And the mamon yikorhoin, which means the big money, the big stuff, the monopoly, the big industries. What about the rest? Vyas sheorhoin. Whatever is left in the country, whatever few dollars people have left from selling groceries or doing services, a few bucks you make from servicing people, whatever you're going to do, oh, that megamrin toivin, that means they break into little pieces, it seems. They break into little pieces. Umefalgin yashoin, and they distribute it. They break it up, and they distribute it. Kemodin falgin, just like you put in a pot meat and bones, and you stir it.
Okay?
It's an amazing insight. It's a mamish, unbelievable. I think it's an unbelievable insight from the Targum Yonasan, how he looks at what corrupt leaders, how they run a country. Fascinating. Way ahead of his time. He saw already the way the world would operate way ahead of it. I mean, in his time, that's how the world operated? Maybe it did, I don't know. The world was so sophisticated, it was a very different type of world. The economy of the ancient civilization, of going back, was very, very different, obviously, than the modern world. It's only a little...
Or maybe not. Maybe. After all, the concept of democracy didn't exist. I mean, maybe in theory, but governments didn't exist. So the strong...
But besides
the
government...
The strong man, the elites took the
advantage.
The wealth and doled out whatever they felt like doling out.
It's very complicated to understand, to study. I'm sure there are people who are big experts in this that to understand, to go back in time and understand Bavel, define the economy of Nebuchadnezzar. How did the country work? How did the economy operate? Define Parasumodai. Define Yavon, Alexander the Great. How did it work? What was the system of the economy? How did the thing happen? It's very complicated.
Well, okay, so with the Greeks already, we have writings which are, at least philosophically, theoretically...
And did that contribute to their downfall? Did the economy,
corruption always does that.
Corruption. So how do all these things come together? I mean, it's very, very fascinating. All right, now let's take a look at the Malbim.
But in the case that when you started with,
Doniel, Hanania Mishael Vazaria.
Yeah, that's how they stayed afloat.
Look at Paro. One of my father's most popular topics of discussion was Yosef was the first economist. And Yosef, the Chimesh Eretz Mitzrayim. Right away when Yosef saw there was going to be a famine for 7 years, he saw there's going to be an issue. He told Paro what to do, and he proceeded to lay out an economic plan how the country should be governed during this time of famine. And then with the priest, and they should get, and this happened, that happened. There's a lot of depth. Modern economic theory, when you take modern economic theory, and then you go, you study Yosef, some of those things you realize, Yosef already invented. And it all depends, of course, on interpretation. You have to look in the Rishonim. There are many Rishonim who read the Pesukim very differently, have very different interpretations of exactly what Yosef was telling Paro to do, and he'll go learn. This Rishonim, this is Milton Friedman's approach. And this Rishonim is the approach of this economy. And this, I don't know all the big names. It's all there. It's all in the Rishonim. He studied the Pesukim Yosef how he laid out an economic plan for Egypt, and you study modern economic theory, and you'll see... What?
Because Yosef was the first one to advocate long-term planning, not just for today, but and saving, which means sacrificing today's benefit for tomorrow's. That probably was a very revolutionary idea.
Who says it was revolutionary? It's very logical. Well, it did not exist before Yosef. It's not necessarily correct. Why don't we say that? It's something that is so simple.
What would hold a strong leader back from doing exactly the same thing we've been talking about? Just hoarding the wealth and, you know...
Well, if he's a chacham, zeh chacham royes hanoylad... You have to plan ahead. If you're going to take all the money for yourself, you're not going to reinvest in the infrastructure and in a healthy economy for people who have what to do, then it's not for your own best interest. The people are going to rebel. There's going to be restlessness. There's going to be poverty. What was the first crusade all about? A lot of the historians, no one really knows. Everything is a very... The more you read about the first crusade... I still have your books. I have to give you back your books. The more you read about the first crusade, the more more people are doubting. What was it all about? Was it really all about a religion, or was it about money?
Economics.
The people were very poor. They were very restless. The church was thoroughly corrupt. The feudal system. There was no opportunity. It was stifling. People have a need to grow, to achieve, to earn money. It was about money, it was about religion, it was about both, some this, some that. It was just about the need to what's called wanderlust, adventure. What's this? What's going on?
Did anyone save for retirement?
Well, that's a very good question. It's a very good question. No, not necessarily. I wouldn't say that.
You're supposed to save 15% of your annual salary.
No.
It's very expensive to die.
It is
very expensive. Not
just
so simple.
Like in the Far East, they relied on their sons to take care of them.
And let's say you don't have a son, and let's say you don't have children. Who are you relying upon?
Your daughter?
And let's say you don't have a daughter. Okay, these are all very, very big issues.
Amongst the Amish, the oldest did not inherit the property. It's the youngest inherited the property, and he had to keep an extension of his house for the parents to live with. So the Amish culture, yeah.
Interesting. Just the opposite of the Torah. Where the Torah says that the Bechor gets Pishnayim, he gets double.
The youngest one. I think okay. The other one's got a piece, but they
it's very, very, like, when you see other cultures, you then come back to appreciate the Chochmah of the Torah. I went to a shir yesterday, Shmibin, and he's learning about the Adnei Hasodeh. What's the Adnei Hasodeh? So he went to all these Perushim, very, very fascinating. One of these is there were creatures that were human-like, real human, they had intelligence. The only difference was their umbilical cord was attached to the earth, attached to the ground. So they had limited mobility. You couldn't go more than probably the size of this room, because if you cut the cord from the ground, you're dead. That's it. And these were people who, according to some of the Rishonim, had intelligence. They were like human beings. The only thing is, their whole life is yoinek from the earth, some of a mystical creature of the ancient times, the Adnei Hasodeh. So when you learn that, you give an incredibly new appreciation to the chesed that Hashem did with us, that we are wireless. We all operate on Wi-Fi. It's really an incredible thing. Hashem could have made us also, that we're attached to our parents, and they are attached to the ground. People can be there. Hashem could have made a world where you have to recharge. You have to be attached to the ground, and yet it's a chesed that Hashem made man. Can you imagine? We're not like the Adnei Hasodeh, where you have no strings attached. Literally, no strings that you want. You can go wherever you want. Isn't that an incredible chesed? Why don't we make a bracha for that every single day? We make a bracha. Hashem gave us intelligence to differentiate between night and day, eyesight. We should thank Hashem every single day. Hashem, you created us in such a way where we're not attached to the ground. Maybe that's the bracha. Matir asim. Okay, they're very good. There's a bracha. We normally say that in reverse to the chevle shena. When a person goes to sleep, it's like he's been tied down. When you wake up, you're unshackled from the chevle shena. But you're saying another idea. You're saying maybe, since we do find the something called a min adam, there is a human-like creature that existed in ancient times that grew out of the ground, which had all the forms, all the features of a man with intelligence, it appears. Yet the limitation was he was attached to the ground. So Baruch Hashem, Hashem is Matir Asurim. We're not attached to the ground. Okay? When you study other cultures, you come back with a very deep appreciation of what we have. Hashem Nosan Lanu Toiras Emes. You have to believe that the Torah's derech of Yerusha is MS. That's part of being an Orthodox Jew, to have emunah, that there are many cultures out there in the world, and they have very different systems in place for Yerusha. Everyone is equal, or you're saying the Amish, the youngest gets everything.
Not everything, but most.
Most, or you're talking about women inherit equally. They inherit the same way a man inherits, a woman inherits equally, and yet the Torah has a whole different set of rules. The Mokoim Sheyesh Bein Ein Lebas Kolum. A firstborn gets double. Everyone else gets one portion. And you ask yourself why? What's all about? And you have to have emunah. The end of the day is you have to have emunah asher nosan lanu toiras emes. That's what it comes down to, emunah, tzadik b'emunah seyichya, especially when you look around the rest of the world, they do things differently. And you can't say they're foolish. Chochma bo'amim tamim. If someone tells you there's wisdom among the nations, believe it. When they are doing, they set up different systems of economics and all different types of things. There's chochma. But yet, the Torah...
Some more than others.
But Torah, yeah, and so you ask why by Torah is it different? And in fact, we've bent backwards in order to undo what it says in the Torah to make it come out like the Goyim, the living will, v'chul, all these different types of things that are out there. We've bent backwards. Listen, that's the way it is. But if this is the principle, we have to have a emunah that asher nosan lanu toiras emes. Okay, let's go further. Let's finish over here. Another 2 minutes. Okay, Oz, back, we're up to the Radak. So the Radak is Pasuk Dalid, Oz, page 477, Pasuk Dalid, Oz, Yizaku, Oz. Kishe Yavoy, Alehem, Oyev, Yizaku, Lashem, Velo, Yaneh, Yisam, Kemosh, Elohim, Oinim, Lazakas, Swanim, Hoashukim, Midig, Neged, Mida. Exactly, we learned in the Mitzvah of David, Vizel, Shama, Ka'asheri, Heireu, Ma'alelehem. It's going to be proportional to what they have done in their evil deeds to the people who called out to them, Kmo, Shehem Heireu La Aniyehem, Kain Yora Lohem Hoyev. No, now different, I'm sorry, now what the Mitzvah says. He says it a little bit differently. He says that, well, one more time, V'lo Yaneh Yisam Kmo Shlo Hoyu Ahim, no, that he does say, okay, he does say, Shlo Heim Oin La Zakas Haniyim, Pashuk Mida Kenegin Mida, the same way the poor people cried out and they did not answer, instead they exploited them. Likewise, when they will be exploited by their enemy and they will cry to Hashem, Hashem will not answer. Let's see the Malbim. Malbim Pasuk Gimel and Dalid, back on page 475. The lo yesh lohem oid maligzol meitam ki shalu es kol asher lohem. After they've already eaten their flesh and they've stripped off their skin and there's nothing left, guess what? You'll find more. Oz v'es atzmosehem pitzehu yiftechu hu atzmos l'chapes im yesh v'moyach bo atzmos. They'll go steal every last penny you have. It's not enough. It's not enough to go and take your flesh and to take your skin. They'll break the bones to suck out the marrow. The gam yifrisu the yishbru ha'atzamos lishnayim kimosha misimin abasa b'sir katan shoshayim ha'atzamos. They'll put your bones into a pot Uche basar besech kol achas, so at the moist, mis that chim, the bones, they will bubble, they will boil, they will be cooked. Ad shemot si kol hamoech shemochem kein yilchatsu chaniyim b'mamoinam uvugufam ad dich ducha shel nefesh until they'll squeeze out the neshama. Okay, to squeeze out the neshama. The mitzudos, the Malbim said something which no one else said. And he said, the purpose of putting the bones in a pot is to extract the flavor of the marrow. In other words, you break the bones to suck out the pieces of marrow. Okay, you have mamoshos. So you think you're done, right? No. In the bone, there's some flavor of marrow. So that's something which is tangible. So for that, you need to put it into a pot and cook it to get out the flavor. So there's, in other words, there's, then the wicked, these wicked people, they don't leave over anything. They take your wealth, your skin, the marrow, and they'll that's even cook your bones to suck out the marrow. That's how far he writes to the word adichducha shel nefesh. They'll crush. The ducha means to press. To press and crush out the neshama to the extreme. Next pasuk, Malam page 477. Oz v'im kein achash oisim ma'asim roim keile. Im oz be'es apurani os yezaku l'ashem lo yana isam. V'gam yastir ponav mehem be'es ahi. Los yo hashkochose mehem. Ula ov zom bi'ad hamikre. At this point in time, Hashem will abandon the Jewish people, the leaders, the Jewish people, because of their sins. He will be hester upon him. And he will just let them fall into chance. Hachi ze ovel mi'itoi. So he's going back to what he said before. He said, Hakitzar, Ruach Hashem, is Hashem limited? Hashem is not limited. The reason why Hashem is master panav is because it's mida keneged mida. Halayzeh magia lochem b'tzad hamishpat. You get what you deserve. Kasher heriyah maleyam b'imkein eich toimru. How dare you say back in the previous perek, im eilem ma'alalov, why is it that Hashem has abandoned us and allowed us to suffer to such a degree? It must be Hashem is limited. Hashem is not limited. Hashem is doing to you what you did to others. Other people came crying to you for help, and you ignored them. So me, the kenegi me, Hashem is going to ignore you. V'hara, just like you were evil to other people, you hid yourself. Likewise, v'hara bo alem me'atzme, kifim aleim v'hachanasam, for the evil came upon them, mida, kineged mida. Okay? Now there is a maimah chazal, a shua maimah chazal. Let's finish up the pasuk very quickly over here. Pasuk dalit. It goes back, pasuk gimel and dalit, the maimah mamari chazal, page 474, very quickly, very short. V'asha achlu sherami, she'era, elu mizoynais. It says that a man has to give his wife, she'era, kisusa, ve'oynasa, lo yigra. What does it mean, she'erasa? A man marries a woman, the Torah says, you better make sure you provide her with she'erasa. What she'erasa? Chazal say means food. A man has an obligation to bring home the bread. The breadwinner, she'era, elu mizoynais, v'chein u'aymer, v'asher ochlu she'erami. V'asher ochlu she'erami. They will eat the she'er. So here he seems to be saying, according to Chazal, she'er means food. They take away their parnasa. The evil people, they deny it because the word she'er doesn't only, we learned until now, according to all of the Mefarshim, Rashi, the Mitzudos, the Malbim, Radak, it means bosar, flesh. He and Chazal seem to be saying that the word she'er means mazoin. She'era kisusa v'yoynasa lo yigra, she'er means food. Here it says food, they take away the food of my people. In other words, they deny them the ability to earn an honest living. That they're corrupt. They set up a system where you cannot make a parnasa. Because all of the money has to go to the rich and famous. You do not give other people opportunities to make a living. This Chazal seems to advocate the idea to break up monopolies. Okay. Is that what he's trying to say? Maybe. Is there such a principle in halacha? In halacha, does a government, if you had a halachic state, make believe in your wildest fantasies that the state of Israel was a halachic state. Make believe. Everything is according to Das Torah. Everything.
Would it be democracy or socialism?
That's a very good question. That's make believe theoretically, Mamish are talking about Yemei Samashiach. Theoretically, all the Rabbanim today do not want it. The Gedolei Yisrael, under no condition, want the state of Israel to be a halachic state. It would be a churban. It would be the biggest churban for many, many reasons. It has to operate with secular law. And that's a very big challenge. How can you have a Jewish state that operates with secular law? It's a dilemma. It's one of the dilemmas that really, the religious Zionists, they lose sleep over this at night. Because a religious Zionist, a real religious Zionist, which probably everyone in this room is to a degree, a religious Zionist, it's a contradiction, Minei Obey, to have autonomy of your own land today before Mashiach comes, and yet acknowledge there's no way in the world the state can operate according to halacha. It will be a churban. It will be a churban before you even start. So how do you deal with that? How do you? It's a very disturbing reality. But let's say in your wildest fantasy it was a halachic state. Does the halachic state have a right to break up a monopoly? Does a halachic state have a right to step in and say, Google, you're too big. Amazon, you're too big.
AT&T.
Do you have a right to do that? All the carriers, do I have a right? Tough question. You can see the Sanhedrin HaGadol sitting and deliberating on this for heavy-duty stuff. Is it, according to halacha, you're too big, and we're going to break you up, yeah?
I would say the halacha of the state is not developed, because all the halacha we're living now was developed.
The British, Turkish.
We didn't have a state.
I know, okay, going off the topic. I'm going off, listen, Vash Ach over here, he seems to be saying over here. Okay, let's go further. Let's finish up. The next page 476. It says, there are three dreams that are good news. Nor, this is a famous medrash. It's a very, very famous medrash. Nohar tzipor kedera. If you see in your dream a river, it's good news. If you see in your dream a bird, good news. If you see in your dream a pot, it's good news. When it says you see a kedera, it means a keder with no meat. Aval kedera sheyesh babasar. If you see in your dream a pot with basar inside, that's not a good sign. He's simin lepurana. Shenemar, because this pasuk we learned ufarsu. It's a pasuk describing churban. It's a pasuk describing wickedness, that the evil people will break up your bones and your flesh and put them in a pot and cook it. So when it says in Chazal, and if you see in your dream a pot, it's a good sign, just make sure the pot is empty. So when you dream tonight about pots, and about birds, and about rivers, make sure it's empty. Truly put all three together. Chicken soup. That's what it really means. Why chicken soup? The nohar is the water. The pot is where you put...
You need the pot.
The pot to hold the water, and you put in a bird for flavoring. So what do you get when you combine together? What it says in the Chazal, the Nohar, the Tzipor, and the Kedera, you get chicken soup. That's what you get. Okay, it's a Jewish thing. Chicken soup is a sign of peace. It's a sign of peace. That's really what it says here. So when you make a peace treaty with your friend, you serve as the main course chicken soup. Okay, we'll continue with this next week.